Let's begin this morning with Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul's an SVP and Senior Portfolio Manager there. Paul, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Good morning, Steve. Nice to be with you again.
Yeah, glad to have you back after being off for a week. We missed you. We have lots to cover this week. I guess the biggest story is, and we've been talking about this for months, is the inverted yield curve.
Yes, it is. And it's not just in the United States. We're seeing it around the world. And what's happening now is it's increasing the likelihood that we're going to see a recession in the United States and maybe a global recession, probably within the next 12 to 18 months or so. And as a result of that, it's part of the reason why we've seen equity investors especially get very concerned. And we've seen some of the losses earlier in the week, although we've seen some gains here in the last couple of days as we close out the quarter. But again, the odds of recession are starting to rise. It doesn't mean that one's starting tomorrow and the equity markets are supposed to roll over. Generally speaking, it's an advance warning that within the next year to 2 years, we could see a recession. And again, that doesn't necessarily mean the equity markets go down. And in fact, when we first start to see a yield inversion, equity markets could rise between 5 to 15%. Between the time of inversion and the time the recession actually starts.
And this kind of confusing. I mean, if you get into the nitty-gritty of the yield conversion beliefs system, there it has to be in place. The yield curve has to exist for a while. There's a chance, I guess, that it could uninvert, I guess, is the best term. And how long after we see the first sign of inversion generally has the average been where there's been a recession?
Usually it I think it's only missed once in the last 50 years where we have had a yield curve inversion and not had a recession. And it's usually a year to 2 years advance warning. It can be as little as 6 months, but generally speaking, it's a year to year and a half or so before we see a recession from the first part of the inversion. And I think a lot of that, when we start taking a look at the economic data, and I think that's what's got a lot of people concerned, is a lot of the data that we've been seeing has been coming in below expectations, the housing data that we've seen and such, that lead a lot of people to believe that we're a lot closer to that recession than we would normally be at this point. The second part of it, too, is now that the Fed has stepped well away from rate increases, the expectation is now that we see a rate cut sometime within the next 9 to 12 months, that probability has gone up to 80% from less than 20 just a couple months ago.
Yeah. So, Paul, this is probably a million-dollar question, but how do investors prepare themselves? So we do have this light flashing yellow. What do we do to position our portfolios, position ourselves to prepare for what may be coming then?
Well, I think the equity investors really don't need to sell today, but you need to start preparing your sell list or also take a look at how you're positioned from an equity perspective. So if we wind up with a recession, the market should decline to potentially 20 to 30% or so. And if that part of your portfolio if that's too much for you to handle, you're probably too aggressive. So you want to, over the next 6 months or so, start to reduce your equity exposure, increase your exposure to U.S. Treasuries, money markets, cash, and be a little bit more defensive. So the sectors that tend to do well, we're already starting to see a little bit of utilities, consumer staples, those types of products that people are going to buy no matter what happens in the economy. And so you want to reduce your exposure to industrials or those that are tied to the consumer, consumer discretionary items. And technology actually should do okay in that environment, but that's generally what you want to do is start to begin the process, not sell it all today, but begin the process of reducing your equity exposure to a level that, were the market to decline a little bit, you're not going to be changing your lifestyle, as it were, because of a decline in the stocks.
For those people who have their investments in, let's say, a 401k on autopilot, is this something that the big companies who manage these funds are going to do for us, or should we be proactive with our 401ks as well?
No, you should be proactive with your 401ks, because a lot of the money managers, if you're invested in, say, a Fidelity Magellan or a Vanguard S&P 500 fund, index fund, you're going to be, by mandate, always invested in the market. So those managers will not make those shifts. Their responsibility is to be always invested in the equity market. So for you, you need to be taking a look at your 401k and taking a look at that exposure that you have, and then put on top of that, if my equity portion of the portfolio were to drop by 20%, and let's assume a 0 to 3% increase in the fixed income portion of my portfolio, am I okay with those losses, or is that too much for me to handle? And that's kind of how you would, just by maybe not a rule of thumb, but just to do a quick calculation of how bad could it be for me, that would be a good first look to see maybe I have too much equity exposure. But generally speaking, mutual funds tend to stay fully invested all the time and do not necessarily make that switch to cash or bonds.
Paul, it's the end of the quarter. A pretty good quarter for stocks.
No, it's been a great quarter for stocks, and that follows a very bad quarter as we ended last year. So we are up a little bit over 12% for the quarter, one of the better quarters that we've seen in a long time. And then, like I said, it followed a double-digit decline last year. And interestingly enough, when you take a look at history, that we've only seen a few times where we've seen a quarter or two quarters back-to-back like this, where we've seen one quarter fall by more than 10% and the next quarter rise by more than 10%. And those very few occasions, again, over the last 75 years or so, indicate that the markets generally will rise 5 to 10% or so the next three quarters. So the remaining part of the year should be okay. Again, even with that inverted yield curve that we talked about earlier, but again, the markets can do well even with an inverted yield curve, projecting that recession being well into the future.
Yeah, and you mentioned earlier, as we check in on some economic data, some of the things we saw this week look pretty poor, I guess is the best word for it, with housing data out this week and consumer confidence.
Yeah, and the consumer confidence number was actually kind of a surprise, because we saw the data from University of Michigan actually pretty good. This is the Conference Board's data, and that kind of contradicted what Michigan had said. The housing data has been weak for a while, and as we've talked about over the last few months, as some of the housing data comes out, housing prices in general have been rising faster than wages, and that's something that really cannot persist for a while, because it becomes more difficult for the individual to buy a house if their wages are not keeping up with the rise in housing prices. What we are seeing here recently, given the decline in interest rates, is mortgage rates have come down significantly. So a couple things. One, if your mortgage is still on the higher side, anything north of, say, 5%, refinancing might be a good option. And the second part is, obviously, with the lower mortgage rate, that does help home buyers. So we would expect to see maybe a little bit of an improvement in the housing activity, at least, over the next few months as buyers recognize a lower mortgage rate.
Yeah, and that's happening at a really good time, because it's now springtime, and that's when we generally see people decide to sell or buy and hit the housing market. So a drop in mortgage rates and getting more people out there, that might be a pretty good deal.
It would be. And, you know, we're starting to see a little pickup when you took a look at the Mortgage Bankers Association data on refinancing activity and new home purchase activity. We're running a little bit ahead of the same time or a year ago or 3 years ago. So that's good. We're going to see, I think, a little bit better housing market. So, again, that's one piece that should do a little bit better here in the coming months.
What do you like here at the end of the week? Anything that we should be looking at?
Well, you know, I still do like the equity markets over the next 3 to 6 months or so. We're not aggressive buyers here. But again, I think if you take a look at some of those mutual funds that may focus on companies that pay good dividends, those should hold up pretty well. We still do like the international markets, especially emerging markets. They have done pretty well this quarter as well. And we still do like, for the fixed income side, we'd probably stay away from the junk bond area, the high yield area, and focus a little bit more on short to intermediate term treasuries as we take a look at the interest rate market that has done actually very well here so far this year. Again, many expected significantly higher interest rates this year, and that has not been the case. And our call has been for an interest rate environment that would be stable to slightly lower over the course of this year. So I think that's a good place to hide, as well as see an okay rate of return over the next 6 months or so.
All right, Paul, remind people again how they can get a hold of you.
They can always drop me an email, and we can continue the conversation and chat about their own portfolio at enolte@kingsviewam.com.
All right, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you again next Friday.
Very good. Enjoy. Take care.
You too. Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. Lots of news in the robocall world this week. As the FTC announced it was blocking planning to block more robocalls. Verizon also saying it's getting ready to clamp down on potentially hundreds of millions of robocalls. We thought we'd talk this over this morning with Jackie Wattles, who's a reporter at CNN Business, a correspondent at CNN Business. A lot of companies, AT&T, Comcast, Verizon, all want to do something about this and are all making moves. Jackie, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
It's a very timely conversation. I don't know if people saw this over the last couple of weeks, or maybe it was maybe a month ago, but I think it was just a week or so ago. The CEO of AT&T was giving a talk at the Economic Club of Washington, and his phone rang, and it may have been a robocall. I don't know if it was staged or not, but it shows that we're all sort of not immune, if it was real, to these robocalls.
Right, exactly. Some studies, a recent one had it as many, nearly $50 billion perhaps made last year, which was a 57% increase over the year before. People are not, it's not unusual to hear people say that they get, one or more of these a day, actually.
So what are the companies doing? I know you've been writing about this and reporting on it, AT&T, Comcast, we saw Verizon this week. Talk about this as well. Are they making any meaningful push forward to stop some of these calls?
Sure. Well, it's a difficult issue. What everyone is saying, at least from the telecom industry side, is that they're banking pretty heavily on a new technology that's going to roll out over the rest of this year, which is going to help regulators and others really track and better understand spoofers. And those are the people you're probably familiar, the robocallers that can call your phone and make it look like they're calling from a number that's really similar to your own phone number. It's commonly called neighborhood spoofing or something like that, and it can even make it look like they're calling from your own number. And robocallers that use that technique are able to skirt caller ID. They're able to mask where they're actually calling from. And this has really been a big problem for regulators and for the telecom industry trying to crack down, because you don't know exactly which numbers are bad actors, and you don't know, which calls might be spoofed for a good reason. For example, your pharmacist and a lot of businesses will spoof calls, in order to use a more preferred outgoing number. But this new technology is an industry-wide collaboration. So a lot of different major telecom companies, AT&T, Comcast, Verizon, all the big names you think of were working on this tool. And they're supposed to implement it this year and help folks that report bad actors flag the telephone numbers that are actually from, you know, the scammers and the fraudsters.
Yeah, I was left wishing that I was a Verizon customer this week because they announced back in January and then confirmed this week, too, that this app that they have that had until I think recently been a paid app is now going to be free to everyone with an iPhone and Android device. It may cut out nearly 300 million calls. That's the kind of thing I think consumers might want to hear more about.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's actually quite a bit on the marketplace right now. What Verizon did was make some of its apps free that can help filter out some of these spam calls. And AT&T actually already does something extremely similar, and they already had some features free as well. So it kind of brings Verizon more in line with AT&T. But almost all big wireless carriers have this type of app. There's also some third-party apps. One's called Nomo Robo, and there's another one called RoboKill, or RoboKiller, I believe. And these can help. These can definitely help, flag very suspicious numbers and pretty obvious robocallers and spammers. But they don't catch everything. So it's definitely true that even if you have one of these apps, you're still not going to have, a very peaceful, 100% peaceful, phone service.
Yeah. And then we're all looking, too, to the FCC. I know that the FCC has said it wants to get some of this under control, but it really has not been successful until now, has it?
Right. And that's what I was talking about with the tool that all of the industry has been working on. It's actually called Stir Shaken, and it's kind of just a fun name to refer to this tool that's supposed to better identify spoofers, because spoofing has been the big reason that it's been so hard to track and ban robocallers.
Part of the thing, too, is that not all robocalls are illegal. I think that's important for people to understand. Tell us a little bit about that.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So robocalls are pretty common. You might get them from your pharmacist or, some local schools might use them to sort of send out a message to a bunch of people that is legitimate and important and you want. And there are some tools being built in to make sure that those aren't filtered out as well. You know, with the existing apps, it is still possible that you might miss some robocalls. None of these apps are completely perfect at filtering. But that's what the industry is working on. This new tool they're rolling out this year, the FCC has said that if, all of the major telecom giants don't implement this new anti-spoofing technology by the end of the year, then they're going to consider more regulations. FCC Commissioner Ajit Pai has said that, pretty much promised on that one. So,
yeah, and do we have any idea what that might look like? More fines or some sort of tighter rules, I guess, would be the least likely in that?
He hasn't said. I think he's pretty much trusting the industry on this one. You might have seen John Oliver, kind of the comedian, kind of kicked up this issue again. He, on a recent episode of Last Week Tonight, his HBO show, he sort of tried to poke fun at the FCC for not doing enough and set up his own robocalls to bug the commissioners every few minutes and remind them that they need to crack down harder on this issue. But even before that happened, robocalls were at such high volume last year. The FCC was well aware of the issue, and the telecom industry had actually already been underway developing this new anti-spoofing tool that's supposed to make, filtering and blocking apps much more effective. So if I had to guess, I'd say that, most companies are well aware and they're ready to roll out this tool. Verizon announced yesterday that it would be the first to roll out the anti-spoofing tool on its wireless network. So there is hope on the way in the industry, at least for its part, says it's very dedicated to getting better.
Well, Jackie, we've got our fingers crossed here. I think all of us listening, everybody listening this morning probably is hoping for the best outcome here. So we'll see how it goes. And we appreciate you being with us to talk about it this morning.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks for having me.
Jackie Waddles with CNN Business, where she covers tech and commercial space flight and business. We're going to link out to the story on this that Jackie's written about robocalls, too, so you can learn more about some of these technologies and some of the efforts to fight robocalls.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN, Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward a flat open on Wall Street a little bit later this morning. Dow, NASDAQ, S&P futures all up less than a quarter of a percent this morning. Let's check in on agriculture and commodities now. Orion Samuelson is with us. Good morning, Orion.
Well, good morning to you. And last week it was the lean hog contracts going up the $3 daily limit. Yesterday, lean hog contracts went down the $3 daily limit. Disappointment over export sales of pork to China. The number came in at 21,468 tons for the week ending March 21st. That was the lowest in at least a month. And as Rich Nelson, our friend who is the chief strategist at Allendale & McHenry, said, we had a net cancellation today, not even a small purchase, and that took the wind out of the sails right away. And then, of course, yesterday we did get the quarterly pig crop report. USDA said the March 1st hog inventory 2% above the same point a year earlier. The breeding inventory up by 2.2%, while the market hog inventory was up 2.1%. So the lean hog contract is the one that's now going through the ups and downs, and we were down the $3 limit across the board yesterday. That means today the daily trading limit will increase to $4.50 a hundredweight. And then, of course, today, Steve, we get two major reports from the Department of Agriculture. We'll get the quarterly grain stocks report. That will be out later today. And then we'll also get the planting intentions report. And you know, with all the snow melt and flooding we've had, that planting intentions report could really change between now and the end of June when we get the actual planted acreage report, because it's tough out there and doesn't look like it's going to get much better very soon.
You're absolutely right, Orion. As a matter of fact, I saw this week that Illinois soil moisture profile is in the 90th percentile. Lots of flooded areas, especially down in southern Illinois. And, of course, we all are still watching the upper Midwest as well, with more flooding possible there, too.
Yes, indeed. And if we get spring rains, you know, we're getting close to the month of April with April showers. And if we get spring rains on top of all of that activity, then it's going to delay planting season considerably. So it's going to be, but it seems that like this every spring, and we do get the crop planted, but it is going to be an interesting planting season ahead of us. And I'm sure a lot of farmers are going to again worry and get frustrated by Mother Nature. Don't fool with Mother Nature. She'll get to you.
Absolutely. Orion, I hate to ask, but it seems like one of the topics we hit on every week. I know the Treasury Secretary and the Trade Representative just wrapped up in China, said they had constructive talks there, but also I heard this week that the talks could go on for a couple more months or so, or even longer. It doesn't feel like there's any solution again this week.
Not a quick solution, no. We keep getting the report that we're making progress, but we've been getting that now for months, and we're still not seeing any conclusion to this trade situation between China and the United States. And we still have to get NAFTA approved, NAFTA number two, still have to get that approved in Congress, and we haven't gotten that done. And labor unions this week said the new NAFTA is not good enough for American workers. We've got to make that better. And so we've got a lot on the trading calendar right now that we've got to keep an eye on. And we're working on an agreement with the European Union, of course, on their concerns about agricultural technology.
Orion, what's on the morning show tomorrow?
Well, tomorrow morning, we're going to talk to one of the members of the Illinois Ag Leadership Training Program who a couple of weeks ago came back from their annual trip to Washington, D.C. We'll talk about what one of the class members felt about that trip. And so we have that to talk about, and always markets, of course.
All right, Orion, we'll be listening, and have a great weekend.
And the same to you, my friend.
Orion Samuelson with us again, the morning show at 5 tomorrow morning, right here on 720 WGN. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Friday, March 29th. Personal income for February and personal spending for January lead off the economic reports. Economists forecast a 0.3% bump in both metrics. Personal income declined 0.1% in January. Spending fell 0.5% in December. New home sales for February will be out this morning as well. A housing industry analyst forecast an increase to an annual rate of about 620,000 homes, up from 607,000 in January. And also on the calendar today, consumer sentiment numbers out. There are a couple of Fed speakers, too, including Robert Kaplan and Randall Quarles. And Chicago PMI today. And on the earnings calendar, I should mention Huawei earnings and CarMax. So lots of things that could move the markets on this Friday, March the 29th.